All right, that was tremendous. Thank you for being here tonight. This is it's a summer with our family nights and different things going on. We've had a lot of special speakers throughout the summer and then the split sessions. But the couple times I am up, I do want to talk a little bit about family, okay? And I want to talk a little bit about some things that will help us in our families. Sometimes people say, I'm not married, my children are out of the home. Really, the things we'll talk about tonight will apply to all relationships. But I want us to understand that the family is important. Really, the family is the glue to the fabric of our society. And you can trace the downfall of our society. And by the way, it is downfalling. Downfalling, is that a word? It's going downhill. It's because the family has. And there's just no way around it. The nation is going down because, really, our churches are going down. Okay? Why are our churches going down? Because the families are going down. And I hate to say this. No, I don't. I shouldn't. We say that sometimes. No, I don't. If I hated to say it, I wouldn't say it. The families are going down because the fathers are going down. And Pastor Esposito used to say, the fathers, and you can expand that to spouses, they're struggling because they've never been taught. And I think that's true. You know, we don't really, most of us here, well, not most of us, but in our society, we may not have grown up in a family where we saw the right kind of family modeled. Okay, by that I mean when I was 5 years old, 4 years old, or 5 years old, I think it was four, my mom and dad split up. So I grew up in a single parent family my entire life. And so, and that's not a knock on my mom or dad at all, but it's not that was natural for me on a regular basis to see interaction between a husband and a wife. And so the thing is, we may not have heard that. We may not have seen two parents together. We may have been raised in a dysfunctional family. Now I do say this, every family in here in some sense is dysfunctional. Okay, how many know I'm talking about? Okay, but some are more dysfunctional than others because of whatever reason. And really, the biggest culprit, though, is we just don't understand the Bible. We don't understand what God's word that he works in our life helps us to be better in every relationship, and that's including our families. Every bad thing that's happening in our nation, you could look at it, and it starts with the destruction of the family. We look at the divorce culture, and I understand, and I'm not slamming, there are some people in here, and maybe things happen early on or whatever, I'm not saying, but we have a culture that rewards divorces. We have a culture that makes it easy to bail out, right? And by the way, if a back door is open, people will take it. Whereas if it's no back door, a lot of times you have two people that are good people, and they know that. They're like, you know what? We'll figure this out. We'll work through this together. But we have that culture where people just don't care about that. If you look, and I've looked at them, every survey that talks about children and their struggles and people, the percentage of ones that go to prison and on drugs and all of it, the number one factor that is in every single one of those things is this. There was no father in the home. There wasn't a father in the home. And I've said it. My mom was fantastic. Now, I had my issues, okay? I dropped out of kindergarten. I was sick. I went to kindergarten for 2 weeks, and that was it. And then I went to school, and when I was in high school, I dropped out of high school. I finally did graduate from college. It took me all that time to get a certificate of some type. Thank you. But my mom kept her eye on me. My mom did everything she could to keep me in check. And by the way, because of that, I wasn't as bad of a train wreck as I could have been. But I didn't have a dad at home. It's like, if you're not home at this time, you're dealing with me. That might have put a little more fear of God into me, right? And I'm not slamming it because my mom, she made it through and she did a great job. You can tell. Okay, thank you. The statistics tell us. By the way, if you're in that situation, you're here, thank God you're saved and in a church. Because a lot of them aren't. And you have a church family to help you. But we also have the selfish nature of people. How many people are now choosing not to get married, choosing, if they do get married, not to have children because it interferes with their life? And they just want to do their own thing. And then also, we struggle with the immoral culture, which produces children without two parents. By the way, I'll say this, abortion is not a form of birth control. It's murder. Okay? And it's just, it's ridiculous. But our immoral culture, let's just have children. We don't need to be married. This has to be 15 years ago. We're going on vacation soon, and we always end up on the farm, my wife, to visit her in-laws. And I enjoy it. I don't think anybody else. They get their paper from their big city, Othello. It's 11 miles away, 7,000 people. And they only print it once a week. Now, what I like about this newspaper is small town newspapers are just different. They have what they call the police blotter. And they tell every bad thing that happened that week and who did it. My favorite story was Bill Johnson of, 4736 something Avenue in Othello was caught. I guess he'd been drinking. The police were called to an incident. He was outside drunk, swinging a dead cat by its tail. Okay. That's their big story. But I saw they had their births for the last month. And I read them. And I remember to this day, they had 14 births, and out of the 14 births, only four of them were from married people. Farm town, 10,000 people. You're putting the child at a disadvantage. And then really, we just have a lack of commitment to our responsibilities. We want to be married without making the commitment to meet the needs of our spouse. By the way, if you got married because of what they could do for you, you got married for the wrong reason. Okay, what can you bring to the table? By the way, if you bring something to the table, you'll get something back. We want to have children without making a commitment to put the time in to be a parent. Okay, and it does take an effort. So the verses, as we get to this, that we read are both talking about the foundation of the family, which is the intimacy between a husband and a wife. And by that, I mean the closeness. The husband and wife relationship is the greatest really determining factor between whether or not the children are going to do good. The children are going to turn out, and I know they can turn out in, by God's grace in situations that are not, but I'm just looking at the percentages. If that relationship is right, you are putting your family in a better situation for your children to do right because you're setting that in front of their eyes. God desires that a family, and not just the parents, but a family be close. That starts with the parents. And then it extends to the children and to the next generation. The point is, God's view of the family is much different than society's view of the family, right? We look at it like, well, family gets in the way of what I want to do. That's only true if what you want to do is not be part of a family. To me, the greatest blessing and the greatest thing that I'm a part of is a family. Everything else in my life is just an add-on, and it's great, but the family, to me, is, other than my relationship with God, and you know that, is the thing to me and in life. But Pastor, I want my freedom. We don't have a lot of children compared to others, but we have seven. And when they were younger, people would see us, seven children are like, are you guys crazy? It's like, you think I'm crazy? You should meet the Espositos. You should meet my in-laws. I'll never forget one time we used to have a 15-passenger van, and it was a Ford. And if I'm in church, and I have to be honest, that was a great car. We ran that thing into the ground 200,000 miles, and we never had a problem with it. So we made a mistake and got another one, and it didn't go that well. But I remember we had our seven kids in the Pinedas. We were watching all four of yours. And the funny thing is, if you look at our children from the oldest to the youngest and you add the four Pinedas, they all look like they all go together. And I remember we all went to get pizza, and they were just filing out of our van, and people are looking like, what is wrong with you guys? Like, no, these four aren't mine. But they're a blessing. We just have the wrong kind of view of family. I was going to read a little story here, but I won't. But it's a story I read a long time ago. A girl wrote in a magazine, and she talked about when she was 12 years old, her mom looked at her and said, "You know, I love you, but if I had it to do all over again, I don't think I would have had you." And she didn't mean that in a mean way. And this lady tells a story about when she had children, she looked at her children, she remembered what her mom said and said, "Now I understand what she meant, because it's basically affecting my life." What a selfish attitude to have. But anyhow, all of that to say is this. It's not easy sometimes to have family. It's not easy and all that, but it far outweighs anything else you can accomplish in life. It's the greatest thing you can ever have. So, how do you have a good family? One of the things you need to do is you need to make sure your family is close and you work at that. And so for a few minutes, I want to give you three thoughts about three things you should have in your life if you want to have a connected family. And I don't mean connected to the internet, okay? Number one, you need to have, and by the way, these will apply to many areas of life. You need to have connecting communication. Now, when you get to the marriage relationship, one of the most important things is the communication between a husband and wife. When I do marriage counseling, we talk about this, and we talk about how important it is that couples communicate with each other. I mentioned this morning that no couples get together with the idea of down the road, this is going to end up being a train wreck. They get together with the idea that this is my forever, okay? Pierce and Jaylene just got married. I'm pretty sure their idea is to be together forever. But what happens if we're not careful, we stop communicating instead of talking openly with each other, and stuff starts to heap up. It starts to build up because you're not letting it out. And then when you do let it out, it's like Mount St. Helens, right? Come on. Mothers, that's how you discipline. Come on. You're not maybe consistent. Like, I know my mom, she maybe not was the most consistent with disciplining me, and sometimes I got away with things, but I always knew there was going to be a time when she wasn't having it, and she was going to make up for those other five times I got away with it. How many of you know what I'm talking about? And I didn't even question it, because I'm like, I deserve every bit of this times two. But in a relationship, if you're holding it in and you're not communicating with each other, it is going to boil over and things are going to be worse, where keep that closeness you had when you got married, keep it together for the whole time. You have to have that kind of communication. Turn to Proverbs chapter 18. We're going to look at a few verses quickly, and I'll give you a couple thoughts here about communication. The importance of our words, and I want you to see these in Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 21, and then we're going to kind of jump around Proverbs. I probably should have put them in order, but hey, you'll go back and forth and have a good time. Proverbs 18, 21. Here we go. Ready? Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and they that love it shall eat the fruit thereof. Do you see? Your words can bring life and encouragement and strength to somebody, but it also can bring death, discouragement, and can suck the energy out of a person. Your words aren't just idle things, so we've got to be very careful what we say. Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 17. He that speaketh truth showeth forth righteousness, but a false witness deceit. That's someone that's not telling the truth. There is that speaketh like the piercings of a sword, but the tongue of the wise is health. Do you see that? Have you ever knew somebody and they knew just the thing to say to get to you, to stick that sword in you? It's almost like an art form. But let me just tell you something, it's very hurtful. It may make a person feel better, but it's wrong. But it says, with the tongue of the wise is health. That person, when there's something going on, they can say just the right thing to make it better. That's what we're looking for. Proverbs chapter 10, verse number 18. Proverbs 10, verse 18. He that hideth hatred with lying lips, and he that others slander is a fool, not being truthful. In the multitude of words there wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. Well, you know, Pastor, if I just feel like I need to say it, I say it. That's a lack of self-control. Sometimes it doesn't need to be said. You know this, okay? In a relationship, when maybe you are discussing things with a little bit of energy, and you say that thing that comes out of your mouth, and as soon as you say it, it's like, that was the wrong thing. Husbands, you know what I'm talking about. As soon as it gets past your lips, it's like, can I collect that and throw it back? Too late. You just threw gas on the fire. So, but if you refrain your lips, it's wise. Man, how come this is so much easier to read than to actually do? Proverbs 15 and verse 1 and 2. Okay, here we go. A soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. If someone's irritated, going right back, and you say, Pastor, are you perfect at this? No, I violated each one of them. That's how I know. You could have said something to diffuse the situation, and instead you engage the situation. Come on. We've all done that. Okay. And then Proverbs 29:20. Okay, here we go. Ready? Seest thou a man that is hasty in his words? I mean, they come out before you're even done talking. There is more hope of a fool than of him. Okay, we better get away from this. I'm convicted. What's the point? We got to be careful. We've all violated it, and every single one of us that has violated it, we know like, oops, don't do that again. So, there are several types of communication that we need to understand. Let me go through them quickly. First of all, there's communication which I call closed communication. That's when everything stays inside, as I already mentioned. And when it comes out, it's going to come out all at once like flowing lava out of a hot volcano. We hide it in there. By the way, you need to communicate. Do you know this? Your spouse, and nobody for that matter, can read minds. Right? How many know I'm talking about? Now, I'll say this. With my wife, I'm getting closer. We can get in a car and go somewhere. And like just out of the blue, she'll start talking about a subject mid-thought. Something we talked about 4 hours ago. And she'll pick it up like we're in the middle of the conversation. And I heard, she did that one time. I'm like, I know what you're talking about. Like, that's what you... It's getting like, wow, I'm a mind reader now. But look, you assume people should just understand. Well, you know, I shouldn't have to tell them those things. We're dense. Yes, you do have to tell us. Don't assume anything. Be kind enough and be caring enough to just don't hold it in. Wife, sometimes we hold it in. I'm not a wife. You hold it in because there's not a resolution to the situation. So you know what you give? And you've heard me say it. One word answers. How's your day? Fine. Oh, what are we having for dinner? Food. Okay. Where are the kids? There. Is there anything wrong? No. Can I tell you something? She's lying. Okay. You know, husbands, you know why we hold it in? We, ladies, help us. We want to avoid drama. I don't like drama. My wife loves drama. Like if a situation's starting to get, she's like, come on, babe, we got this. I got this. Let me take, you know, if she has something to do, I'm not going to prepare in advance. I'm going to wait till like 2 hours before it. Let's go. Me, I'm like, oh. By the way, every guy hates this phrase. You ready? Honey, we need to talk. Come on. How many are you going to bear witness? And it's like, okay, what did I do now? Is there something going on? I mean, did something happen? And we're racking our brains like, what's going on? We don't want drama. But just because we don't want drama and just because there wasn't a resolution doesn't mean we don't need to bring it forward. Help. Children will do this sometimes. By the way, sometimes children, if they're like that, it's because they have an attitude problem. If a child has an attitude problem, tough luck. Don't let them have an attitude problem. But sometimes it could be because we're not listening. I heard this story, and the story was told by the missionary that it happened to, that two of his kids, when I think they were 18 or 19, they left the home. They just took off. And they went out and they were doing their own thing, and they came back a little bit later, and the lady gave the testimony at the ladies' conference and said, we asked them, what happened? What caused you to leave? And one of the things they said, and the missionary said they owned up to it, that they would never listen to the child's style when they were growing up, listen to their side of the story. Now I don't let our children like complain about things. Like, you got in trouble for something, I don't want to hear your lame excuses. But they just said, you never let us talk. You just always assume the worst. Now, the family got back together and all that, but we got to listen to each other. So there's that. Then there's casual communication. And by the way, every good relationship needs this, right? Just talking to each other. How was your day? What is going on? Is there anything that you need? Listening to them. You know, you get married because you like being with each other, and then all of a sudden you don't want to talk to each other. That's vitally important. I remember when, I think it was Josiah, when he was little, he'd come home on Sunday afternoon. Brother Rubio was his teacher. And we were having lunch, and I'm like, hey, Josiah, how was Sunday school today? You know, most kids are like, great. What was the lesson about? Oh, it was about Jonah. He wanted to tell me the story of Jonah. And he's sitting there telling it to me, and he knew all 4 points. Now, there was only 3 in the story, but he knew all 4. And after about 5 minutes, I'm like, hey, Josiah, why don't we go over here? I'm going to lay on the couch, and you sit over there and continue the story. But I mean, I knew it was a 20-minute lesson. He gave me 30 minutes, so I don't know what happened there. But we need to talk. You need to communicate. Just talk to each other. Husband and wife should have a few minutes, at least every single day, just talking. Then here's one we struggle with, correcting communication. Do you know sometimes you got to take care of situations? You do. How many of you have, or did have, perfect children? Is that your hand going up? Because I know her. She was putting her arm around her, close enough. Come on. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, okay? They need to be corrected. But it has to be done the right way. If we only communicate with our children when they need to be corrected, you're going to have a problem. Do you know sometimes they need to be praised, right? Sometimes you just say, hey, you did a great job. But if we're careful, and I struggle with this. You're a nitpicker. It's like I used to coach our sports teams all years ago, all the time. So when my kids are playing games, I'd go to their games, and I didn't want to tell them how good they did on the way home. I wanted to nitpick the things they did wrong. How many of you know what I'm talking about? Like, I know you had 50 points, but you made a mistake right here. You know, I know you hit the game-winning shot, but we shouldn't have had to do that because you threw the ball out of bounds 2 minutes earlier. Come on, how many know I'm talking about? I was watching a football game years ago, and Troy Aikman was talking. He said he was with his daughter, and he went to her game, and as they were leaving, he started doing that. And she said, Dad, stop. You're not my teammate. You're not my coach. Can you just be my dad right now? How many know what I'm talking? We just want to nitpick at everything. But sometimes we have to do with things. Let's make sure that we do it in the right way. Don't get our kids thinking that the only time that mom and dad talk to me or get is when I do something wrong. Here's another one, conflict. It had to start with a C. This is a fight. Now, Christians, we don't fight. We have disagreements. Okay? How do you handle your disagreements? Be very careful. This is where harsh things are said, right? I think this. Well, I think this. Well, you're an idiot. Hey, that helped. It's like stay on point. You know, I don't like exaggerating words like, you always. Now think, do they always? You tell your kid, you always do this. Like, do they? So I just say, a lot of times you have a tendency to do this. Every time you never, it's not true. This is where untruths were said, right? We assume someone's attitude. We assume motives. We assume actions that aren't necessarily true. And then we say mean things. By the way, you can't say something mean and come, you can't, you should, you need to come back and say, I'm sorry. And like, well, you know, I didn't mean it. You know, like, you tell your kid, I wish you weren't my child. And you come back, you know, I didn't mean that. The kid's going to remember that forever. Be very, very careful. In the heat of the moment, What usually happens is we don't address the problem, we attack the individual. Can I just tell you something? That doesn't help at all. And then there's the right kind of communication. It's connecting communication. This is when you have the kind of communication where you can talk freely about things with each other. And by the way, some people just don't like to, right? They just don't want to bring things up. I am more of a conflict. I'm more of a conflict avoidance person. And you know what helped me with that? Being a pastor. You just have to face things head on. That's not me, right? Like, come in, like, this is, we just got to deal with this. I don't like it. That's why it used to be so great in the early days. As assistant pastor, it was fabulous. You know, you need to talk to Pastor Esposito about that. After all, he's your pastor. Now it's like Brother Ross reminds me, I use that on you now. Okay? We need the kind of communication where it helps us to be together and be on the same page. And let me say this, be careful about things that shut that down. All the other things I talked about shut that down. Here's another thing that shuts down. Sharing those kind of details with people that don't need to know. You see, when you, whether in the situation with a child or a situation with your spouse, are talking about things that only deal with you, if you go start talking to other people about those things, what are they going to naturally say? I'm never saying anything again. You have to be very careful about that. Communication is vitally, vitally important. How do you have communication? Let me say this and we'll move to the second point. The closer that we get to God, you know the little pyramids, it's not a scheme, the little pyramid thing, right? Boom, boom. The closer you get to God, the closer you get to each other. It's like this. If you want to tune a piano, you don't tune a piano using another piano. Did you know that? Because that piano may not be completely in tune. Am I right, Brother Grandy? You use a tuning fork, whatever. Those pianos need something outside of themselves to tune them. And if both of those pianos are tuned at the same time to the, is it a tuning fork? Okay, whatever it is, right? If they are both connect, if they're both completely in tune with that tuning fork, they're going to be in harmony with each other. It could be the reason that we struggle with harmony within our relationships is that we're struggling in our relationship with God. And the better we are at that, the more in tune we will be with one another. So that's the communication. The second thing I want to talk about is connecting construction. What does it take to build relationships? Very important. Here it is. Time together. Time together. You must have time together in any relationship or it's going to fall apart. It is so easy to get so busy that we excuse that. We make excuses for why we don't do that. You make time together, and as you also find time together. You make time together by putting it into your schedule, and you find time together by looking for opportunities to be together. The scourge of our society is busyness and absentee parents. And by the way, when you're in ministry, you if you're not careful, you can do this. When I was in college, I don't know how many pastors that would come through and talk about, you know, I'm so busy and I have to sacrifice time with my family and blah, blah, blah. And I'd hear some of them really wax eloquent on that. And I wasn't even married and I wasn't even dating. And I heard that stuff and I sat in my seat and said, I will never do that. If God called me to be married and he did, I'm going to be married and I'm going to put time in. If God gives me children and he did, I'm going to put time in with my children. And I'm not trying to be mean-spirited here in any way. We're big on the family in our church. I heard three guys, and I won't tell you their names, preachers, and all of them bragging about working 100 hours a week. Now, I personally don't understand how that's even possible. I don't know. All three of them, their families, at the end, were all train wrecks in some way. You have an absentee dad. We need to be together. You need to find time and you need to make time for that relationship. How do you do that? Put it in your schedule. we live in this time when it's all about us. I remember, I don't know if you remember, hon, there was some ladies in the daycare years ago, and their kids were there, and you told me that, nobody that went to the church, like, oh yeah, the three moms, they all decided to go to Disneyland together, and they left the kids at the daycare. I'm thinking, I don't want to go to Disneyland. The last time I went, the kids talked me into it. We went 2 days after Christmas. It was so crowded, there were lines just to walk through the place. Now, they did have a Starbucks, and I spent a lot of time over there getting coffee. I'm like, this is ridiculous. And I'm like, I'm never going back. And the only reason I went in the first place was for the kids. Now they're adults, they can go on their own. I ain't going, okay? But I dead sure am not going to, hey, hon, let's go to Knott's Berry Farm. We'll leave all the little ones at home. That's the only reason I would go, okay? Maybe some of you did that. It's really quiet. I'm sure about that. I couldn't think of doing something that my children would love just for me. Because I don't want to do it, okay? I'm going to do it because they want to do it. How do you connect with your family? Do you know if you're married, you should have a weekly date? You say, well, my wife never approves of who I want to take out. No, you're missing the point. I mean a date with her, okay? There needs to be that time together, especially you start having children. When you start having children, that's when you start saying, I don't have time for that. No, when you start having children, you have to have time for that. She needs that. You need that. Time together. There may be busy times that interrupt, right? But that ought to just be who you are. You should. I believe that you should have family vacations. I know guys that preach against vacations. I'm just too busy serving the Lord. You're nuts. The church is not going to fall apart because someone goes on vacation. By the way, you know how our church is, right? We're in vacation. Our church, everything is the beginning of the summer, and from now to the end of August, it's like there's half the church on vacation every week. I'm glad. As long as they make sure their responsibilities are fulfilled. You need to get away with your family. Your family needs to know that they're important enough for you that you're going to take time off every year and take them out and go away with them. And do bring them back with you, though, by the way. Okay? And I know, the kid showed me a video the other day. Some kid was on one of the social media, and he's talking about all the crazy things that happen in their family when they go on vacation. Like, right, you know, the mom says he doesn't like them anymore and all this nonsense. There can be a little drama on vacation, but it's worth it, okay? Work on, just drink coffee and it'll all be good. But your family should have that. You ought to have times where you just do things with your families. Have activities together. And do things. Find ways to have them with you. When I was younger and the kids were all smaller and I coached all of our teams, if I had an away game somewhere, I just took whatever ones were old enough to come, I just throw them in the van with the team and they all just came because I figure if I'm out, I just want them around. Okay? I didn't want to just leave them at home. You got to find time to be with them. Do things together. It's easy when you have boys, right? Let's go to the game. Let's do this. Let's go shoot, whatever. You go shopping with your girls. I shop with my wife, especially I like Costco, but their samples aren't as good anymore, you know? And our daughters, they got older. It's like, hey, Dad, I was going to go shopping and do stuff for the family. If I'm free, I'll go with them. Why? There's that little extra opportunity to spend time with them. You've got to think like that. You said, well, Pastor, I'd rather not do that. That's your responsibility, okay? And then to have things you do year-round with them, but you need to do that. And then lastly, and this one's very vitally important, you should be connecting by church. See, we misinterpret this or think about this verse. Joshua chapter 24, verse 15. He said, if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. And then listen to what he said. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. I wonder how many people have that verse somewhere on their wall. When we were first married, I think we had that on our wall. And 99% of them don't serve the Lord. They just go to church. Serving the Lord is action. It's not just, it's getting your kids, not just at church, it's getting them involved with you in church. Not just sitting here. And by the way, that's important, by the way. Being at church. Get them involved with what you're doing. I think the family ought to be at church together, and I think they ought to be serving the Lord in church together. You know, one of the good things that was good for our family in the early days of the church, we're a missions church, and so all hands on deck. Our girls were serving the nursery when they were 8. You say, why? Were they exceptional? No, we didn't have anybody else. Don't worry, we didn't lose any kids. Everything was good. But it was just like, there's stuff to do at church, and there's not a lot of people. Let's get involved. Let's be a part of what's going on. By the way, I think all of our teenagers ought to be on a bus route. They serve in the rest home. Let them be a part of what's going on. So it's just, we serve the Lord. Well, I don't want them to do that. I'm going to then have them serve with you. But get them involved. How can you have that connection at church? First of all, you make church attendance not optional. Look, if you wake a 3-year-old up any Sunday and say, hey, we're going to church today. You want to go? You know what they're going to say? No. Well, my alarm clock goes off. You know what I say? No. I'll go back to bed. You don't give little, you know. By the way, we're ruining our families by letting little Junior run the spiritual fervor of the church. Junior's not running it. You want to go to church? No. Great. Let's get dressed. We're going anyhow. They'll be fine. Once they get here, they're going to be in a good mood. You know, but let's make that non-optional. Hey, man, we're going to church today. It's going to be great. Their friends are there. They're involved with things. They'll love it. It's not optional. Next, make serving the Lord a family thing. It's a family thing. Like Gary, you have the little ones out there helping with the wheelchair and the van and all that. Why should they wait? Some of our teenagers are helping in the rest homes, and some of them are teaching. What are they waiting for? Our church, in the early days, all of our Sunday school teachers were most of them, Brother Ross, were high schoolers teaching second, third, fourth grade. Or they were our singles just graduated. We weren't afraid to release them for ministry. We wanted them to get involved. Make soul winning non-optional for the family. So soul winning time, let's all be here together. And then last, let me say this, don't let the children drive the spiritual bus, they will crash. You know what happens sometimes? If you're not careful, I've seen this in families before, their children get a little older, and because that maybe the parents violated some of these principles, the kids start going a little bit sideways, and so the parents go sideways with them. So when a child goes sideways, if they want to come back, what do they have to come back to? You're sideways now. Remember the story I gave about the missionary? When his children started to come to their senses and they wanted to go back home and work this out with their family, you know what? Their parents were right where they should be. And they came home and they told their parents, and their parents apologized, and they got everything together, and they got back going the same direction. But what we do is our kids want to start doing nonsense, and we give in to them. I will never give in to nonsense with my children. And they're adults now. Now, we've never had to deal with it, but if our kids weren't going to keep the rule in our house, they were more than free to move out. You're living under my roof. By the way, if they were adults, they're coming to visit me at my house. They're going to follow my rules at my house. Not come over here and drink in my house. Never. Okay? You come over here and watch nonsense in my house. My house. Now, we haven't had to fight that, but the point is, don't let them drive the bus. Be the parent. And by the way, the littler they are, the better off you're going to be if you just, this is who we are, and enjoy it. They'll love it. But this is important. Family is important. Everything ill that's going on in this society, yes, we can translate to the family. But let me say this. It doesn't have to be that way for us. Remember the message a couple months ago? Goshen. When all the plagues were happening in Egypt, God's people in Goshen, they weren't experiencing any of it. God said, you don't need to experience all the nonsense the Egyptians are going through. I'm going to protect you because you're over here in Goshen. You know where we should put our kids? We ought to put them in Goshen. We ought to be following the Lord and say, hey, what's going on out there? I'm not trying to be condemning, but you don't have to go through all that. God has a better way. And by the way, and what you'll do is you'll produce children, and they're going to have those kind of families. Put them in a better position. Let's all stand together if we can tonight. Thank you for listening. Every head bowed, every eye closed just for a minute. Every head bowed, every eye closed just for a minute. If you're married tonight, let me say this. Your marriage is worth making better. It is. And by the way, it's a constant fight. It is something all of us must constantly work on. You know why? Because we're human. And you know what we do? The longer we're together, the more we take things for granted, isn't it? Isn't that true? The more we want to put things on autopilot, life doesn't work that way. You know, if you have children, it's worth investing in them. It's worth it. It's not always easy. Requires a lot of effort, but it's the most rewarding thing you can ever do. How's your relationships tonight? If we're going to be married, if we're going to have families, let's fulfill the responsibilities in a God-honoring way. Let's make sure our communication is right. Let's make sure that we're doing the things and setting our schedule up to be successful in our families. And let's make sure that we don't forget the spiritual aspects, which really are the most important. Piano's gonna play. If God spoke to you tonight, why don't you come? Maybe you just need to make a commitment to say, Lord, I'm on the right path and I'm gonna keep going. I wanna reap the rewards of a life lived for you. And one of those rewards is a wonderful family. The longer you're married, the better it is. The older the kids are, the bigger blessing they are.